the time to explore the mind of a stripper,
then you can find the time to spend with your actual family.
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Damn! What they on? All steroids and no carbs? Them's a thick-ass kid.
This is Prime Time.
We're not like you. We're grown up.
Your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports. Here are Isaac Ropp and Jason Sakanik with Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
Sorry, voiceover guy, I don't want to make you a liar, but Isaac Ropp not here today. I think this is a time in the show where we normally do the disclaimer, let everybody know that Ropp is okay, he still works here.
Has not been fired, not on vacation, dealing with a family situation, where he needs to be. Hope for the best for Ropp, and he should be back at some point this week. We're not sure when, but like I said, he'll be back when he can be back.
Yep, and if he's not back tomorrow, I believe Mike Lynch is hosting the show. Will Darkins will be in producing.
It's a rotation. No one wants to work with me too long. It's like after a day, everyone needs a respite. Everyone needs a break, like a buffer zone.
Absolutely.
Two days with me is a lot. Rob's been doing it for like 13 years. It's probably why he's taking a leave of absence now. He's the one that's probably sick.
Well, and the thing is, for you, since, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but since I don't really listen to this show, I mean, you may be doing the exact same show you did yesterday with your brother, and you can do the same show with Mike tomorrow.
You just churn it out. I got the easy job. It's all on you guys. You guys are the ones that have to do something. I just sit over here and hit the on button. I got the best job in the world.
Yeah. So so the week will maybe a little bit strange, but just know that we will still bring you everything you need to know about sports. That includes a preview for the Ducks game this weekend. And because they are playing a late game, the After Dark game, that's a bonus for all of you fan listeners, because that means you get a three-hour Sinner and Saint on Saturday to start off all your Ducks coverage.
How about
and
that?
And who doesn't want that?
I will tell you this. We got some talent here in the studio. Not only do we have all three local shows, but the Hot Corner, Mike does a great job. And then with Rashard on Sundays, I love the Sinner and Saint, what you guys do with Will. I first want to say, hey, this is the best lineup we've ever had at the Fan. There's a lot of talent here. So if people haven't listened to some of the weekend stuff, dude, give these guys a listen. They're funny. They're entertaining. Both with Mike and Rashard, both with you and Will, you guys do a really good job.
I appreciate that. It's kind of you to say, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. So let's look ahead to Saturday. You've got the Ducks sitting at 6-4. You've got the Arizona State Sun Devils sitting at 6-4. I think there's a lot of people that get disappointed when they see that not only do they have a 7:30 kick, but it's not the only Pac-12 game. How much does it bother you? I've talked about this with some of the other personalities that played. I know Cam wasn't a fan of it. Will's certainly not a fan of those really late starts.
Well, they suck as a player.
Yeah.
And I think they're great as a fan if you're not going to the games. Like, I love, selfishly, as just as someone watching, I love late kicks. Right? You get, I don't know, but maybe if you're young and you go out, but I don't go out and party on Saturday. Like Saturday night, you run, or like during Saturday, you run around, you do stuff with the kids, or you got the honey-do list, you do whatever you want. But there's something great about coming home, maybe grabbing some takeout, getting a pizza, getting some wings, grabbing a cocktail or two, and planting your ass down in like your favorite chair, turning on Pac-12 After Dark. I love the late kicks, but if you are a player, it's awful because you're used to routine. And so you wake up, you know, 7:30, 8 in the morning, you go downstairs, it's like a team breakfast or whatever, and then you just sit around, and you're at a hotel.
Yeah,
you just sit around all day long. And now, like, they try to break it up. Like, sometimes they'll take guys to movies, but they don't let you just kind of go. Like, game day, you're, like, kind of sequestered. You don't just let people kind of go about and do their own thing. You all stay together as a team, and it can be really monotonous.
And the game's at home, so that gives an advantage to the Ducks.
Yeah.
I mean, being, you know, in their environment, they don't have to worry about the but you're still finding something to do.
Yeah, you're still in a hotel, though.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah. Before a game, you're even at home, you're still in a hotel. I mean, you don't get to stay at your house.
Yeah.
Especially with kids, they don't let you risk that. Yeah. No one's gonna be in charge of themselves on Friday night. No, there's bed check. So you're in a hotel, and I suppose, you know, maybe nowadays, maybe they do let some, like, at maybe midday, maybe they let some of those guys get home. But even when we had late kicks, most of the, you know, back when I played, they still kept you at the team hotel doing team activities the entire time. Like I said, it just makes for a long, boring ass day. You don't want to play super early, but that noon to two kick, that's primo.
That's a sweet spot.
That's primo right there.
So Herm Edwards, I mentioned this, because I don't really know how to feel about it. Herm Edwards is kind of overshot his expectations, I think, by most people's account. But right now he sits at 6-4. Last year the Sun Devils finished 7-5. Why are we all so excited about what Herm has been able to do with this season? It's really not an improvement at all unless they win their last two.
No, well, but I think a lot of people thought that this was going to be a boondoggle, myself included. I thought he was in so far over his head. You know, it may prove to be as much, right? I mean, he walked in and you got Benjamin, you got N'Keal Harry, you've got Manny Wilkins. I mean, there's talent. And so maybe it is an element of when those guys move on, can Herm recruit? You know, can he keep a staff together? You know, it's one season, but they have looked a lot better than anyone thought they would look, myself included. But to be fair, when you look at some of their wins, look, it's not necessarily great, right? They have a big win over USC, but USC has warmed over garbage right now. They have a win over UCLA. UCLA sucks. They have a win over Oregon State. I mean, really, they did beat Michigan State early on in the year, 16-13, which is a nice win. Mm-hmm. Michigan State's not great, but that's still a nice win. Utah, that was surprising because I thought Utah was legit. Now, Utah did lose their quarterback, but Arizona State was winning that game.
Yeah. Oregon just played them without their quarterback and without Zach Moss.
Exactly. So I'll give Arizona State a lot of credit. They are better than what I thought they would be, and they look better coached than what I thought they would be. But you're right in the sense that there seems to be this belief that Arizona State somehow is like defied expectations and they're rolling right now. You're right. They're 6-4. They've won three in a row. USC, Utah, UCLA. One of those is a nice win against Utah. But we'll see how this thing finishes out. But if they do win out, they beat Oregon, they beat Arizona, they win the Pac-12 South. And if that happens, I get the Pac-12 South sucks, and it does. There's not a great team in there. I thought Utah had a chance to be, and that certainly is not the case anymore. If Arizona State wins these final two and wins the Pac-12 South, that's a hell of an accomplishment. And I will tip my cap to Herm Edwards and say that I was, at least for 1 year, was way off, because they are better than expectation. Right? They would be at that point. You lose these next two, and then you're right. You're 6-6. You split them. You're 7-5, which is exactly what Todd Graham was when you fired him.
Yeah, well, and it's funny, too, because we talked about this with Joey Harrington a little bit when I filled in on Friday, but the way expectations kind of change your view of a team, because here's Oregon sitting there with the exact same record, and I think a lot of Oregon fans, because of the wins that they did have, how well they played early against Stanford when we thought Stanford was going to be a good team, how they went out and beat Washington, and now these two teams sit at the same spot, and I think people are maybe overvaluing the 6-4 with the Sun Devils, but undervaluing it with the Ducks. And if the Ducks can get this win, that's a big win, and it sets them up very well to finish strong against Oregon State. They finish 8-4 versus finishing 6-6. How differently do you see those two potential results? And I think that's given Oregon State a chance at the Civil War.
If Oregon wants to have any kind of season, you have to win these next two. And no offense to Oregon State. I've said all year, Oregon State's a bad football team. And I don't think Oregon's a bad team. I don't think Oregon's a good one right now. But Oregon State, we said all along, on the defensive side of the ball, you just don't have it.
You have to have guys to go out there and play the positions.
And you don't. And I think the offense has done an admirable job this year. And I think Jonathan Smith and his staff have done a really nice job working with limited resources and have put together a pretty good offense. And by the way, I think you see the loss of Jonathan Smith at UW.
Yeah.
I think when you look at what their offense is without Jonathan Smith, it doesn't look very good.
I'm excited to see over the next few years. Sorry to derail that.
No.
But Justin Wilcox down in Cal mm-hmm. is taking a team that was kind of offensive minded, and he's coming at it from a very defensive oriented standpoint. He was a defensive coordinator before, and he's building that team. He's got three defensive coordinators on his coaching staff.
Yeah.
Or guys that were at one point, and then Jonathan Smith coming in as an offensive coordinator. And you have these two teams building their programs
from
two separate sides of the ball. I think over the next few years, that's going to be really interesting to watch, even though they were hired 1 year apart.
Yeah, and both need to get better players. I mean, yeah. Plain and simple. You just need better players at those schools in order to compete, but both are very well coached. But if Oregon beats ASU, they should beat Oregon State. If they don't beat Oregon State...
Even if they lose to ASU, they should beat Oregon State.
They should beat Oregon State. There's no excuse for losing to Oregon State. There just isn't. You're way more talented than they are. That's unacceptable. And so this Arizona State game to me is the season definer. And we've said that a couple times this year,
But this is a huge game for Oregon, because whether, you know, you finish 7-5, you know, you 7-5 or 8-4, or however you end this up, obviously you're still going to go to a bowl game. But I do think there is a big difference between winning these final two and going to a bowl game than splitting these, or God forbid you lose both of them and moving into next season. And when you looked at the season, you know, I don't think that I had too high expectations. And I know there's been some injuries that have come at this thing. But I still contend that regardless of what happens these final two games, this has been a disappointing season for Oregon. Mm-hmm. I expected more than this. And I feel like the fans should have expected more than this. You may not have the depth that you want, but you have difference makers on the football field. You have one of the best receivers in the country. You have one of the best quarterbacks in the country. You have a veteran offensive line. Now, to be fair, the offensive line has been beat up. You had a guy in Tony Brooks James that was supposed to be a bell cow for you. You've got a couple talented freshmen. There's NFL players on each level of the defense. There is, between yep. Jordan Scott and
Troy Dye
and Amadi. You yep. have talent. You may not have the depth, but to me, when you look at the schedule that you played and you were given three wins off the get-go, mm-hmm. oh, and by the way, you're playing in a Pac-12 right now that's as bad as I've seen in 7 or 8 years. To me, there's no excuse for being a 6 or a 7-win team. You need to finish this off, win 8, try to go to a bowl game, get 9, and try to salvage your season. I think anything less than that, to me, is a colossal disappointment and a bit of a wasted year for Oregon.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think a lot of people are disappointed with the results from last week when you were playing against a Utah team that didn't have their starting quarterback or their top running back.
Well, let's look at Washington State, okay? Washington State going into the season, nothing was expected of them. Washington State lost their all-time leading quarterback in basically every stat, right?
Yep.
So I feel like it's easy sometimes to come up with excuses. And I'm not saying that some of these aren't legit for Oregon, right? I think their offensive line issues are legit. I think that they have not been able to run the ball, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that you're just thin up front and you're playing guys that maybe aren't completely ready to play right now. So I get that. So when I say excuses, I'm not necessarily trying to throw shade and have those be daggers, but I will say, look at Washington State. Washington State had their coaching staff rated last year,
yeah.
right? Rated. Some of it by Oregon. Well, best recruiters in the defensive line coach, you came and plucked away. Their defensive coordinator that everyone gave credit yep. for creating a really good defense was plucked away by Ohio State.
They almost lost Mike Leach to Tennessee.
You almost lost Mike Leach, right? So there's some turmoil in that.
Did they lose their athletic director too?
Yeah. Did Bill Moose move on? Or is he still?
I don't know. Anyways, but back to your point. I'm sorry to derail.
No, like Bill Moose may be stepping down, but I don't know if he's still working there. But then you had the distraction of Mike Leach took the Tennessee job. Yep. Mike Leach was gone. Mike Leach had to go back into that locker room and tell his players, oh, well, sorry, guys. I know I was going to Tennessee, but I am back. And then you lose your quarterback to the draft in Luke Falk. You lose your two best offensive linemen, right? Move on. Your backup quarterback, which was going to be your starting quarterback, commits suicide, by the way. Yep. Let's throw that in there. You lose the best defensive player you've had in the better part of a decade in Hercules Mata'afa. A couple other difference makers off your defense. And all Washington State has done is go out and become the 8th best team in the country, go find a graduate transfer that came in and run this system, playing at a top 20 level. Do you know Washington State is top 20 right now in scoring defense in the country?
Crazy, isn't it?
So,
and they're winning close games. I mean,
They're winning close games. Not necessarily blowing people out, but they're grinding. They're grinding yep. through this. Yep. So there is a little bit of the, I don't want to hear excuses,
yeah.
right? That This is a situation at Washington State that had every reason to have this season go sideways and say, well, it's a rebuilding year and we were dealing with this, this, and this, but they didn't.
Yeah.
Right? Every team goes through adversity. Every team isn't as deep as they want to be. Every team has some injury concerns. And to me, when I look at Oregon, if this thing ends up at a seven-win team and you split these final two games, and you look back on this with the schedule they had, with as bad as the Pac-12 is, I think it will be viewed as a colossal disappointment. And really the one highlight you can say is Washington. Mm-hmm. That would be the one highlight. If you lose to Arizona State this year, this yep. weekend, your one highlight, you can say, was Washington. Outside of that, this was a season of missteps and disappointments.
And if Washington loses to Washington State, that even becomes a little bit devalued. I mean, that'll be the biggest game of the Pac-12 this year. So.
Yeah. And yeah, Bill Moose did. Yeah. Bill Moose is gone.
Went to Nebraska. Yeah. So thank you. Better you today. Text line 55305. When we can't think of something, you tell us. Hey, how much does your life change when you become a superstar NFL quarterback? Kind of interesting. One of the things that Patrick Mahomes had to adjust in his life. If you haven't seen this, we will get to that next. You're listening to Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Duck fan getting all sensitive.
Yes, they are.
I get that you want to defend your program, but saying Helfrich left this program in shambles, that's horse crap. You're making excuses. Mm-hmm. That's BS. There's 9 to 10 other schools that would trade rosters with Oregon in the Pac-12 right now, with the exception of probably USC, Washington, maybe Stanford. There's not a team in the Pac-12 that wouldn't trade rosters with you right now. So stop with this that you don't have any talent. That's crap. That's absolute horse bleep.
Or the idea that you don't have all of the resources available to anybody. I mean, we were talking about field conditions earlier on, but the resources and the facilities that you have at Oregon, you have everything at your disposal.
Just stop that. No one was saying this after you beat Washington. No one.
Nope, they were ready to send him to the college football playoff.
You have over the last, even when Helfrich was there, you can go back, we'll talk to Dave Bartu, right, who does like the composite four-year recruiting rankings. He says you're the second most talented team in the Pac-12 behind USC. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you that Washington's roster may not be as four-star heavy as yours. I think Washington's is a better roster with player development.
Well, put Justin Herbert on that team.
That's the other point that I'm bringing up here. Not only are you sitting here making excuses saying that our program is left in shambles, the hell it is. You have NFL players up and down this roster. You do. Like I said, on all three levels of the defense, and you have the number one quarterback. If he went out, stop that. You have Dylan Mitchell, who will be a first or second round wide receiver, probably a first rounder. Stop. By the way, your offensive line is veteran. Yep. It's, you know, granted, again, the injuries have come up, but stop talking to me about injuries. Every team in the country has to deal with them. You know, UCLA is more disappointing than you are. I mean, UCLA is a gall darn joke. I'm not saying that Oregon is an embarrassment or that it's a bad team, but if somehow you want to make excuses for your team being a 6 or a 7-win team when you had the easiest schedule in Power 5 football. And that's not me saying that. That is the numbers. Mm-hmm. That is the metrics saying that you have the easiest schedule in any Power 5. And if you end up as a 6 or a 7-win team, it's underperforming. That doesn't mean that your program is crap. It doesn't mean that Cristobal isn't the right guy and that you can't get things turned around. But if you want to make excuses for your season, that's all it is. They're excuses. I get why, because you're a diehard fan. But realize that's what you're doing is you're making excuses for a team that has not performed up to its ability and what this schedule says it should have been. And stop by saying that like somehow the Pac-12 is really great and the teams you're losing to are just deep and they're better than you, because they're not. I mean, for heaven's sakes, people.
And you're allowed to be disappointed as a fan, right? I mean, sure. If you're a Ducks fan, I mean, the excitement after they beat Washington, I mean, hell, after they lost to Stanford, the excitement level was so high because Stanford had come out and played well to start the season, and they beat USC, and we didn't know what those teams were at the time. But the way that Justin Herbert came out and took command of the first half against Stanford, I think everybody, their expectations jumped up. There's a lot of people saying this was an 8-win team to start the year, and then everybody's expectations leaped on the Ducks. Then they come back after the bye week and beat Washington. Everybody's through the roof. And for people to come back and make excuses now, it's just so funny, because I'd love to be able to put a microphone to you after Washington and then that same guy after the loss to Utah, because those are the same people that were ready to put them in the college football playoff and now are creating these excuses why they couldn't make it.
You lost to a Utah team that lost 80% of their offense. Mm-hmm. 80%. Again,
their offensive production.
Yes, not making up that number. Their quarterback and running back, Huntley and Moss, accounted for 80% of their offense.
Yep.
And it was gone. And you lost to them. So just, again, the injury thing. I hear that all the time. Oh, the injury thing. Well, welcome to the world. Mm-hmm. Washington lost their All-American left tackle. They lost an NFL tight end. Both of their two backs, when they were done playing at Oregon down the stretch, both of those guys, Ahmed and Miles Gaskin, were both out. Mm-hmm. You're running on a third and fourth string running back. Injuries occur.
And again, Utah.
Yes.
I mean, you have it right there. You can't say that your injuries were worse than the injuries going into Salt Lake.
I just feel like Oregon fan right now is making a lot of excuses for what is a subpar season. And sometimes you have subpar seasons. And you can sit there and now we're going to turn into the, we'll yell at the coaches and we'll scream and yell and say we need to make fundamental changes. Again, give it time. Give it patience. I have no idea if Cristobal is the right guy.
Yeah.
No clue. Yep. And you don't either. And we probably won't know for another couple years. Give him a couple years to recruit. Give him the chance to bring in his guys to implement his system to try to change the culture around. If we're having this conversation 3 years down the road, or let's say 2 years down the road, then yeah, I think it's fair to start asking these questions. Did they hire the right guy? But I still, even though I'm not going overboard and saying that you need to make all these sweeping changes, I'm also not going to sit here and pretend that you should be sitting here at 6-4 and being happy about it. Nope. You just shouldn't be. It wasn't good enough under the old regime, and it shouldn't be good enough under this regime. I don't think, in my opinion, this program was at a level that it should have taken 3 years to rebuild it into a very good Pac-12 team. Maybe not a championship team, but certainly not one that's sitting here at 6-4 and hoping they get to 7 wins.
Well, and the other thing to look at, too, is that you have an opportunity in Arizona State coming to your home field. You've been much better at home this week. So there's a chance to finish the season on a high note.
Yes, win these next two.
But the other reason that we look at the Pac-12 being so down is our last real big sample size against the rest of college football was last year's bowl season. The Pac-12 went 1-8,
yes,
I believe. So now you have an opportunity to go out there. And if you're Oregon, you're one of those teams in Mario Cristobal's first game. I know that Willie Taggart just left things kind of high and dry, but that was a very disappointing Las Vegas Bowl last year.
Yes.
And so you have an opportunity here to go, all right, we've got Arizona State, who is a good team. We've got Oregon State, who's a bad team. And then we have a bowl game. Go out and win three in a row. So if you're a fan of Oregon, that's what you should expect, because otherwise the road ahead is going to look a lot different. Say you lose two out of three of those games, or God forbid you lose all three of those games, and then Rome will be burning. But yeah, you need to look ahead and go, all right, what can we do? How can we move forward?
You should, at a place like Oregon, I said this about Washington, say this about USC. I think Stanford probably falls into this category. There should be high expectations, not unrealistic expectations, not 12 wins, national championships sort of expectations, but better than a team struggling to get to a bowl game.
Yeah.
Better than a team that has three road wins in 3 years. Yes, expectations should be higher than that. Absolutely. And while the roster does need to be improved, depth needs to get better. I just don't buy that this is some sort of barren roster that you should lay down and be like, well, we nothing we can do about it. You know, it's going to be a number of years. I don't buy that. I think that's an excuse, and I think it's a lazy one.
Yeah, and a lot of people asking for a new offensive coordinator as well. Yeah. So
I mean, that is, and I think that is a question that is fair to ask. Mm-hmm. I know Cristobal gets sensitive about it, but I think you get sensitive about something that there is a hint of truth about.
Well, but he's also defending his team. These are the guys he has in position.
He hired, and there won't be a change, by the way. Yeah. He's coming back. Yep. Arroyo is going to be coming back. Mm-hmm. And we'll see with another year, under this system, and again, hopefully a better recruiting class and guys getting older, and we'll see what happens next year. But you're not going to see a coaching change. And they're going to be able to point to some numbers at the end of the year. In most metrics, Oregon is a top three team in the Pac-12 when it comes to offense. Yeah. If you look at points per game, you look at rushing, you look at throwing, they're going to be an upper echelon team in most of those. And that's what he will point to. In the offseason, you'll have it thrown up there, and they'll put up a bunch of points, I'm assuming, against Oregon State as well, hopefully against ASU. But there won't be glaring numbers that are going to jump out at you. And so he's going to come back, and you hope next year that there is some improvement. But I think, again, when things don't go the way that people expect them to go, people want blood. People want a quick one and say, okay, this is the reason why. And I do think that Arroyo is going to be that guy that becomes the lightning rod for Duck fans this offseason.
Well, and I think this and a shocker that a football coach may be just being stubborn in the fact that when you complain about depth, even though there seems to be a lot of pieces there, it may mean when Mario Cristobal says that he doesn't have the guys, he might not have the right guys for the system that they want to run.
That is
There's
true.
A big part of that. So if you look at Marcus Arroyo and you don't like the play calling and he's not using Justin Herbert right, well, Justin Herbert isn't his guy. As great as he is and all the potential that he has, that's not his guy. And you'll see over the next couple of years, and that's why you can give them a little bit of a longer evaluation period. But that may be a bad sign that your coaching staff is too stubborn to go, hey, let's make adjustments to use the guys that we have.
Look, I think it's fair to question Arroyo. I questioned him before the season. I feel like I was a little bit ahead of that curve. I feel like I was questioning him before it was cool to do so.
Sure.
I said that at the start of the year.
You've made it cool.
I did not think that that was a great hire. I think you hired a recruiter and not an OC.
Yep.
But again, for the sake of being fair, and that's the thing, I'm not taking shots at anyone. I'm trying to look at this as a fair and from an objective point of view. I'm not anti-Duck. I'm not pro-Duck. Mm-hmm. Just giving you the down the middle. If we're just going to look at numbers, you know what side of the ball is worse? It's the defensive side of the ball. Yep. And you're paying Jim Levitt $1.7 million a year. And I think Jim Levitt's a hell of a coordinator. But if we are going to spread some blame around here and we're all going to go convenient and just throw it all at Arroyo, some of it I think is fair. Some of it I think is a bit unfair. Should some of this go to the guy that is making almost as much as the head coach? And right now, this defense is not very good. From a number standpoint, it's way worse than the offense. Like I said, the offense is top three in almost every offensive category. Their defense is bottom four in almost every meaningful defensive category. But no one wants to say anything about Levitt. We all want to point our ire at Arroyo.
You and I may not be pro-Duck. We may not be against the Ducks, but we are both pro in the news.
Yes.
And we will do that next, right after Mike brings you SportsCenter.
Prime Time with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
All righty, we made it to the middle of the show, I suppose, or somewhere right in the middle of the sports section. Where we take a quick detour, and since we went a little bit long there, I say we do it. I say we jump right in.
Do it.
To In the News.
Right in the meaty part of this program.
Oh, that's right. Today is the 14th of November, 2018. I am your Action News reporter with all the news that is news across the nation, Luke Anderson, with the trusty news contributor, Jason Sakanik.
I do what I can.
Bring you some news if you haven't been aware of it. The campfire in California has now become the largest in state history and the deadliest, 48 people dead. And there's some good and bad stories coming out of this. I'll start with the good one, I guess, if you can find solace in these tragedies. A California couple has adopted a 93-year-old veteran whose town burned to the ground.
Wow. You can adopt a 93-year-old?
So I don't think it's an official adoption yet, but Tracy Grant and her boyfriend Josh Fox now have a man named Lee Bunbridge, which sounds like a 93-year-old man, living with him. Yeah.
Hey, so, I'm on board. I got some empty space. Lee, come on up to Washington.
So Tracy was giving out hamburgers in a parking lot and just trying to help do anything that she could for people that had been evacuated. Yeah. And she ended up staying with old Lee until about midnight before she realized the man that has lived alone in Paradise, California for years had nowhere to go. So it took her hours, but she finally convinced him to go home. And since that day, he's been living with Tracy, her boyfriend, the dogs, and just kind of hanging out. So they've essentially adopted a little old man.
That's pretty cool.
I think that's pretty great.
Yeah, we talked about this yesterday, that it sucks that sometimes it takes the worst of humanity to bring out the best in humanity. Right? And you see after, tragedies, 9/11 or a natural disaster or whatever, all these outpouring of support, and you never hear, it wasn't a Republican taking in a Republican or a Democrat taking in a Democrat. It's a person helping out another person, regardless of your political views, regardless of your race, age, gender, any of that crap. And it's amazing. I just wish that we could have a little bit of that kind of compassion without the death, without the tragic and destruction that kind of leads to it.
Well, and I hate to do this on the reverse side of the story, but Pink's husband Carrie Hart. Yeah, Carrie Hart, the former motocross racer. Yeah. He put out a picture on social media with a sign in front of a group of his friends wearing bandanas and sunglasses, all holding weapons, that says, "Looters will be shot on sight."
Yeah, we're going down that road, huh?
PDC posse. So obviously a lot of these Malibu homes belong to the rich and famous. Pink and her husband, Carrie Hart, are one of those. So he's gone ahead and said that we will shoot on sight if anybody is caught looting.
Like, why do you even post that? Look, I get, right, like, defending your home, I guess.
Hashtag defend your land. Hashtag Second Amendment.
I mean, I guess I get that, right? It's like it's your livelihood, right? No one has the right to come in and kick in your front door or anything. Is that really...
That's your number one concern right now while the fires are still going?
That's your number one concern, is that you dress up like an Old West posse and put bandanas over your face and then you put it out on social media? Like why? Like, yep. Why? Other than to try to feel badass, what is PDC, by the way? Is that...
Let me see if I can see what PDC is.
Because I'm looking at the photo here, and it is. This is the douchiest photo ever.
Yep.
It's a bunch of dudes with small penises and their shirts off, trying to flex, like holding big guns and looking scary and tough.
Is
like
it penis deficient crew?
There's no reason. There's no reason to send that out other than you think it looks tough and you want to play. You know, you want to play war. That's really disappointing that you would even if that's what you're doing, right?
Yep.
Say, look, I'm going to defend my home. We've got guns, right? Second Amendment, sure. And we're going to protect our own. The only reason to put that on Instagram or wherever they put that is, again, to try to make yourself look badass. By the way, you're not shooting anyone. Stop that.
Yeah, get out of here.
Yeah, put your sniper rifle down, all right? You're not. It's not Afghanistan, all right? You're not in some sort of war zone. Not sitting on your roof with your sniper rifle from 1,000 yards out being like, "They're coming for me!"
Yeah.
Could be someone, I don't know, just wandering looking for some aid. A good thing you don't cap them from 500 yards out.
Yeah, it could be a 93-year-old man that had no idea his home was on fire until the gardener came up, pounded on his window to wake him up so he could get out of there, found out he had nowhere to live, and luckily family took him in. It's difficult because I'm looking at this tragedy and you look at it through so many different lenses, and these are both stories on CNN, one right after the other. You go, oh, that's kind of heartwarming, and then you look at the other one and you just go, how?
And by the way, like, nice sniper rifle, the 50 cal the one guy's holding.
Yeah.
You're not hitting anyone from a mile out, buddy. How about that? All right? Last time I checked, you're not sniper trained. You're just some guy that rides motorcycles that had the money to buy a really expensive rifle. I hope that makes you feel tough.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure with the PDC. I imagine it probably has something to do with BMX or whatever, but motocross. That may be their crew. I don't know. I can't find it in here. But, those are your updates on the good news, bad news surrounding, like I said, the deadliest wildfire in the history of the state of California. And we've seen a lot of bad ones over the years.
Yeah.
We will move on to something that is a little bit more local, but maybe just as disappointing. Try to guess on a list of the top 200 cities where Portland drivers rank for bad weather driving. We will do that next when In the News continues. This is Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back to Primetime. We are in the middle of In the News. I am your action news reporter with all the news that is news across the nation, Luke Anderson. And for this one, we move back a little closer to home. Your friends at the Allstate Insurance Company have released their 14th annual report on the best and worst drivers in the country.
All right.
In bad weather situations. And they took the top 200 cities. Before the break, I asked you to try to guess where the Rose City falls.
I think we're probably top 15.
Top
15. Yeah, we're one of the worst.
Oh, yeah, you're saying one of the...
Yeah.
So bottom 15. It goes best to worst.
Oh, no.
So they did rank,
we're near the bottom.
Brownsville, Texas, the best wet weather drivers that there are.
Does Brownsville, Texas really get a lot of bad weather?
Well, so this is what I was wondering, too. So I saw that, and I read a little bit deeper just to figure it out. So the way that they actually calculate this is your average driver gets in an accident every 10 years. Portland... every 5.9. Okay, wow. That doesn't really describe bad weather. So what it says is they did an analysis of how often motorists are braking out of 1,000 times where they brake with more than a 10-mile-an-hour slowdown. So if they slam on their brakes,
sure,
in wet weather, obviously that leads to more catastrophic results. And Portland, Rose City drivers are logging 22.4 hard brakes per 1,000 miles, where your average driver is doing it about 19 times.
Makes sense. And so, I am often amazed at how bad, especially when we haven't had rain in a while and we get some rain, I am always stunned at how poorly we handle it. Because, yep, well, we live in Oregon and it rains a lot here.
Yeah. Yeah, so what it did was went through driving behaviors, because you can't just go, all right, let's see how bad these guys were driving. Let's see what the weather was like that day, because you would have no way of knowing. But what they did was they found bad habits that were terrible in bad weather. And I will tell you that you are correct. They are in the bottom 15. They finished 190 out of 200 cities.
So we're top 10.
Top 10. One of the top 10 worst places to drive. Baltimore, Maryland finished dead last at 200th. For other local cities, Seattle, Tacoma came in at 179th and 167th, respectively. And how about your hometown of Vancouver, Washington?
Are we in there, too?
Oh, yeah. Top 200 cities.
What's the Coov up to?
149th.
Yeah, so you're doing a little better. I will tell you, it's a lot easier to drive in Vancouver than it is in Portland.
Sure.
That has something. I would assume that has something to do with it, too. Well, way easier to navigate the Coov than it is Portland.
I would agree with that, but I think it's also, when you look at it this in one of these big data analyses, it's a cumulative effect, right?
Yeah.
If one person stops short, then everybody has to do that. So there's definitely a law of multiples that go in there. So you would think that just people from Vancouver driving in Portland and people from Portland driving in Vancouver would affect one another, but pretty amazing. All the complaints we had growing up in Vancouver, that Portland drivers were the worst, well, they're pretty close.
Yeah, it's bad. So who's the nine above us?
The nine above us. Let me pull the full list.
I was going to see if you had the full list. Like, who's one through, because if we're 10, like, who's one through nine, or I guess 200 through,
yeah, I know, don't, I did not
190.
Get the full, I did not get the full list. I looked at, so according to analysis released Wednesday by Allstate, I clicked the link and it goes to Allstate Insurance homepage.
Yeah, you don't want
to. Does me a whole lot of no good. No, so that is
right out.
Whoever in Oregon Live put together that reporting.
Because I always contended that I went to school in Utah, and that was horrific, at least in Provo, because we had so many kids from California and Arizona, a lot of Mormon kids,
yep,
out west, that come from warm weather. Even Oregon, Washington, you don't deal with a lot of snow. Well, yep, in Utah, in a stunning development, Wasatch Mountains, it snows, and you've never seen anything like it. You get a lot of 18-year-old girls driving around in a Ford Mustang, and they're like, white means go faster, right? it's stunning. Every time it snows, how stupid people could be behind the wheel. And I just was interested to see if they cracked the top 10, because it was a nightmare down there.
Yeah, unfortunately, like I said, whoever put the thing on Oregon Live just got me a link to sign up for new car insurance, so not super helpful. Also wanted to report Oregon hate crimes on the rise, up 146 incidents, up from 104 in 2016.
Okay.
So this was data for 2017.
If you are thinking about committing a hate crime, then just you're joining the bandwagon at this point. How about you be unique and commit a different kind of crime?
Well,
just commit general crime as opposed to a hate crime.
And of those 146 hate crimes, 84 of them were based on race, ethnicity, and ancestry, 29 on religion, 24 on sexual orientation, 4 on disability, 4 on gender identity, and just 1 on gender as a whole.
Oh, okay.
So most of them racially motivated. And for anybody from Eugene, more than half of those, or as many as half of those, committed in the Eugene area.
Oh, lovely. Doing really well. Bang up job, everybody.
So there is your update.
Give it
on
up.
How Oregon is doing. You're welcome.
We can't drive and we love hate.
That's
alrighty.
Right. And both of those stories you can find on Oregon Live, where I was going to find a nice little bit of good local news. That's why we pushed that to the second part of that. We'll get into more off sports topics when we get into the club hour. In the next hour, we have the Hot 5 at 5 to kick things off. And at 5:30, we were talking to a young man from The Athletic named Jason Quick about your Portland Trailblazers who take on the Lakers tonight at Staples Center. That is all next when Isaac, well, I guess it's not Isaac and Suk, it's Luke and Suk on Primetime right here on 1080 The Fan.